Focus with Jessica Strutt on ABC Radio Perth.
Good morning. Thanks for your company today. When you were at school, how often were your parents in contact with your teacher or your principal? Maybe a couple of times a year, a teacher-parent night perhaps. Maybe a few times a year if little problems emerged. Maybe you were getting bullied at a certain point, maybe struggling in a certain area of your schooling. And what about if you got in trouble? Did your parents always back the teacher and the principal and tell you just to suck it up, even if you felt you'd been wrongly accused or punished too harshly? I certainly grew up in a family where my parents always backed the teachers and the school, even if occasionally I got in trouble for something I didn't do. There's a rule in retail and hospitality that the customer is always right. And for most of us, when we were growing up, there was probably a similar policy in our homes when it came to our schooling. The teacher and the principal were always right. But the school environment has changed enormously. Educators say there's been a monumental shift in the parenting model. Parents are now much more demanding and less likely to believe that their kid could have done anything wrong. And technology means teachers are now often being bombarded with demands, complaints, and even threats sometimes from parents in emails that clog up their inboxes. It can cause serious anxiety and stress for teachers and for principals, and it can create a sort of pressure cooker, toxic environment in a school if it gets out of hand. So how do we better manage the delicate relationships in today's school community? That's our focus today.
This is Focus with Jessica Strutt on ABC Radio Perth.
And I want to know what you think. Are you a teacher or a principal who's maybe experienced this sort of behaviour from parents? Or when you were at school, doesn't matter how long ago that was, were the teachers always right according to your parents? It can be a bit annoying sometimes, but I think it's probably done me well in my course of my life. Maybe you're a parent now. How often do you contact your child's school? When do you intervene to go in and sort out a problem? And how willing are you to accept that, you know what, maybe your child isn't as perfect as you might think? Today on the panel, we're very lucky to have the WA Primary Principals Association President Ian Anderson and also Pat Byrne. She is the president of the WA School Teachers Union. Good morning to both of you. Ian, explain for us a typical situation here in regards to this sort of behaviour, the emails, the harassment.
Yeah, Jessica, first of all, I'd like to say that we don't shy away from the fact that parents, do have a right to be able to complain. It's the way they do it, and making sure that there is a respectful communication between the parent and the school. That's blown out to be ongoing string of emails at all hours of the day and night, and in some cases emails following up the email of complaint saying, you haven't answered my complaint. Where is the answer?
What does the extreme end of it look like? I mean, are we talking 5 emails, 10 emails here? What can the extreme end of this look like?
Yeah, there's one principal at the moment, well over the 100 emails from a parent. From one parent. And these aren't short emails. These can sometimes extend beyond 10 pages. The amount of detail that's in them, the amount of time and energy that's taken up to try and address what's there. Sometimes there may only be one complaint within that, but it's all of the other information that's there. The principal has to deal with it, has to read it, and has to respectfully respond. It's just getting beyond a joke in some cases.
What sort of demands are they making? I mean, so some of it presumably can be trivial and some of it may be more serious, but what sorts of things would we be looking at there? I mean, 10 pages, I couldn't even write a 10-page email myself and I'm a journalist. I mean, what sort of things would you possibly be complaining about?
Yeah, parents can take objection to how a teacher has I'll use the word treated a child, but I'm not using that in the context of done something badly or inappropriate. They may have the child sitting in a particular seat. It could be almost anything. It can also be through to writing to the principal and demanding that a teacher be sacked or somebody else within the school be sacked, which is well beyond. The principal doesn't have authority to do that anyway, but needs to get to the bottom of, well, what's the complaint actually about?
Pat, as the head of the school teachers union, what are the people you represent seeing as similar scenarios to what we've just seen Ian outline?
Very much so. Very much so, Jess. I think there's a sense there that many parents have a sense of entitlement, if you like, that for some of us is quite foreign in the context of your description of your schooling days. I think most of us can relate to that. What we're seeing here, though, I think is that sense of individual rights taking precedence over the community or the collective rights of other children in the school. And this does cause problems for all staff in a school when you do have parents who have that expectation.
You've been the head of the union for quite a while. I know you were. You said yesterday you were there for a certain point, and then you went away from that role. But you've been in this position for quite some time. Does it seem that this sort of behaviour is on the rise in terms of the level of harassment of teachers through these methods?
There's no question about that. Principals and teachers will say categorically that. Whereas even 20 years ago, the level of parental support that you could expect was much higher than it is today. So where there's a conflict or a dispute, excuse me, where there's a conflict or a dispute with a particular parent, what we're seeing is that traditionally, whereas parents would once upon a time have said, yes, we'll support the school, they're much less inclined to do that now. There's no question about that.
All right, let's hear from a teacher. This is Roy, who called in yesterday to breakfast.
One of the things that I found over the 55 or whatever years it was that I was in the service was that when I started, I had a number of allies when I walked into a school or a classroom. The principal was one, or then called a headmaster, and the others were the parents of the kids that were there. Over the period of time until I retired, I found that the big thing that to me seemed to have broken down was the relationship between the parent and the child and the teacher. So that if I, in 1965, had contacted my principal headmaster and therefore the parent to say, look, Billy's smoking a pack of the cigarettes a day down behind the bike shed, parent would come in with the young man and we'd have it out and sort it out, and the parent and the headmaster and I would be on one side and the child down the other. He's isolated. And so we've managed to do something. Now, in the latter years of my time, if I went to my headmaster, principal, and said, look, this kid and his mates are down the swamp end every afternoon sucking on a bit of marijuana or popping a pill or something like that, the response from home was something along the lines, my son doesn't do that. And my son doesn't lie to me. So what you're saying to me is wrong.
Now, that was Roy. He called in to breakfast yesterday. Ian, your response to that, I mean, that's pretty much in line with what, Pat was just outlining.
That's right. And as Roy was saying, the parent straight away say, no, my child doesn't do that. I used to have a saying that the children don't necessarily lie. They don't tell the whole truth. They'll tell the truth that fits their context, and then the parents coming in armed with that limited bit of information. We always suggest to the parent to get all the facts first, make contact with the teacher in the first instance if that's appropriate, but talk to the school, get the facts. But the other bit that I think is important is to keep it as a parent conversation. The conversation between the parent and the school, in many cases, without the child there to start with, just to get the facts and to work through that and build, get some of the emotion out of the conversation.
Do you agree with that, Pat? Is that part of the problem, that we, listen to the little white lies perhaps, or like to believe the little white lies as a parent?
Well, I think we're all tempted to take the side of the person that we know and the person that we love, and I think that's perfectly understandable. But Ian's advice is sound. I mean, the first thing is to actually find out what the facts are. And it may be that the actual incident that we're talking about is not as understood initially by the parent. I think taking the emotion out is very important. Having the discussion and working together with the school, with the teacher or any staff member for that matter, the principal and the parent, to actually resolve the problem. That's what's the important aim in all of this.
You talked about this sort of feeling now, or there's a sort of a sense of entitlement, the sort of idea that the individual is more important than the collective, which is pretty damaging in a school because it is a community, isn't it? I mean, it's a small community environment. I mean, what is sort of driving that? Is that part of that sounds like a huge shift from when I was at school, and I was at primary school in the 80s and 90s through to high school. So, you know, I'm not that out of touch. I mean, what's driving that then?
Well, I think more broadly in our society, there is a shift, or there has been, towards that sense of individual rights taking precedence over collective rights. And I think, you know, we need to understand that schooling has a social role, and that role, we've always understood that to be teaching children how to be part of a wider group, that they're not always right, that they do have to take turns, that they do have to share, and they do have to accept decisions that they don't necessarily agree with. What I think we're starting to see now is that perhaps this role actually needs to be extended in some instances. We're not talking generally, but in some instances, to actually reinforcing to parents that, in fact, that is the role of schooling. It is about teaching their children that they're not entitled to everything and to everything that they want when they want it. I think some parents actually have a difficulty in coming to this conclusion.
Ian, do you agree there's a sense of entitlement there that's sort of changed?
Yeah, absolutely, Jessica. One of the things that we're noticing is that many children, the first time they come to school in kindy, is the first time they've had to share.
Whoa, very different to my upbringing, was one of seven.
Exactly. So we're getting a lot of reports of that creating all sorts of issues. So,
okay.
It's interesting with one of the you know, the priorities of the government at the moment is to ensure we have fewer children with a number of vulnerabilities in the ADC, which is a measure of the child's readiness for school. And if we can achieve that, maybe we'll have more children at an appropriate level of development when they do come to school. And these things like sharing and communication, some basic elements, we'll see a bit of a decrease in some of those things we're seeing.
We've got a few texts coming in, so I will read them out. It's nice to have the text line back on today. We obviously switched over yesterday, so thanks for sending these in. Hi, Jess and panel. I went to school in the 80s. Woohoo, me too. When I had gripes about certain teachers, my mum always encouraged me to see things from both sides. She never intervened on my behalf, but let me sort things out directly by approaching the teacher. This is a useful skill throughout life, not the hiding behind emails and platforms that prevails now. Teachers now are actually under more pressure than ever before. Kids with various levels of disabilities, disruptive kids, kids from non-English speaking backgrounds and who have witnessed trauma, in addition to the national curriculum and schools becoming more corporatised. Julie, fantastic points there. I've got two sisters who are teachers and I think they would agree with all of that. Another one here from Liz. Our school has changed its protocol. Parents can no longer email teachers directly. All correspondence must go through administration. I'm happy with the change as a parent and I believe it will have slowed the unnecessary traffic on all levels. We've got another one here from Sandra. She says, do not allow direct communication with the teachers. Have a liaison office as a go-between the student, parent, staff for issues. So fantastic ideas. We are going to get to some of the solutions, but I think already ABC listeners are showing that they're pretty switched on to this and they might have a few good ideas moving forward. Is that something that you hear as well, Pat, in terms of that idea of children coming to school, a school setting, a pre-school or kindy setting, and never having to have even shared, something as simple as that? These simple values, I suppose, just not being taught at home now.
In some instances, that is the case. We see children with almost no social skills at all, basic eating and drinking. I mean, it sounds horrific, really, but that is the case in some instances. So this is not just a school problem. Again, I think it's a community problem. It's a problem about attitudes towards parenting and about, you know, people actually understanding the responsibilities of the school versus the responsibilities of parenting. I mean, once upon a time, you know, it was pretty clear what the school was expected to teach and what it wasn't expected to teach. I think that line is now much more blurred. I think some parents are quite happy for the school to take over a whole range of teachings that once upon a time were quite clearly seen to be the domain of the parent.
It's 21 minutes past 10. You're with Jess Strutt on the Focus program. We've got news headlines coming up shortly. Today we're talking about how to manage those delicate relationships between teachers, principals and parents. It's certainly changed over the years. I think it's fair to say that for many of us growing up, we would be told by our parents that the teacher and the school and the principal is always right. These days there seems to have been a bit of a shift according to educators in terms of the parenting model, and parents seem to be much more demanding, perhaps at times even quite, I suppose, quite demanding and quick with complaint, sending lots of emails to teachers and with demands and even sometimes threats, we've heard today. So we're going to hear from a principal, Noel Woodley. He has recently retired as a principal in secondary schools and he spoke to me a short time ago. Here he is.
Well, as the level of digital communication has become easier and schools have now developed portals and other mechanisms to make communication between schools and the home easier, what that's meant is that parents and members of the community have greater access to schools and therefore have, in some cases, become extremely demanding and have used digital media in various forms to try and get the solution they want at the expense of other people in the community or at the school. So in other words, trying to find something which suits them at the expense of others. I think as a community or as a society, I think that's what's happened is there's more focus on the individual. So often schools where we are very, schools see themselves as very much part of an integrated community. They're placed in a situation with limited resources, which is fair enough. But parents want, I think, a disproportionate amount of resources or time devoted to their child at the expense of the group. Parents are far more involved in what I would call quite minor issues with their children, and parents are very willing to get involved in things that their child is capable of sorting out themselves. But the parents want this become quite demanding and wanting the school to do things immediately to make what I would call a perfect world for their child. When really a child, as part of their development and maturation, need to be involved in problem solving in issues that helps them establish themselves in the community as a person capable of looking after themselves and being responsible for themselves. Increasingly, parents would write emails to teachers demanding certain actions or activities to take to be considered, and teachers would respond to the initial contact, and the emails keep coming. And the parents believing, I think, that the more contact, the more times they demand, the more times that they can make a noise, that they're more likely to get the solution that they want. As mobile phones are available to students, often parents can be demanding and emailing a school, demanding or SMSing a school, or being in the school office, demanding solutions to issues the school is not even aware about, such as the contact being so quick between the student and the parent. The schools are not aware, so immediately the schools are on the back foot trying to mitigate or appease the parents without knowing all the facts. So that takes a lot of time to sort out, where probably, you know, going back a decade, the student would have been able to sort of solve a lot of those issues themselves before getting the parent involved. The model of parenting has changed. Parents adopt a parent friendship type of relationship with their children these days, and I've seen that change over the years where when I was at school, I was encouraged to develop solutions to my issues myself, whereas these days parents are very quick to be involved as part of that with their own children. Before, when email emailing became a method of communication. It was done through standalone or laptop computers, so somebody had to be seated at a computer in order to do that. With mobile phones these days, the email can come through straight away, instantaneous, and parents demanding want a response to that email almost instantaneously, whereas most businesses have a set of rules about a reasonable time in order to respond to an email, outlining some a line of inquiry, etc. So schools are often put under a lot of pressure where they're not given reasonable time frames in order to delve into the issue and arrive at a suitable solution. In a previous decade, you might get one or two quite serious incidents over a term. Now, because of the amount of contact that teachers have, it can be a daily or a weekly occurrence where they're being forced to spend a lot of time delving into issues or mitigating a circumstance. And it just has a deleterious effect on people's attitude to work and to the overall stress generated by these activities. So it is very difficult for teachers these days. So essentially schools are open for 10 weeks and then there's a break, and that is a fantastic circuit breaker in the day-to-day life of teachers and principals, where parents and students and schools can just stop for 2 weeks. And it sort of breaks that cycle. And it's a very, very important part of the school year that they have those breaks.
What's your advice to teachers dealing with this sort of, bombardment from parents?
Well, they must make administration and schools and principals aware of what's going on. They should not be dealing with this in silence. And schools and the education department have great processes available for supporting staff, so they should be accessing those resources and facilities as soon as they can.
And that was Noel Woodley there. Thanks to him for speaking to me ahead of today's show. He has recently retired as a secondary principal, talking about what he's seen in the changes over the decades as a principal and deputy principal. Ian, Noel touched on the impact it's having on teachers, these emails and the harassment. What sorts of impacts do you see it having on the mental health of those working in schools in terms of principals and teachers?
Yeah, it's having, on a number of people, a huge impact. Just the fact that the name pops up in the email list creates a physical reaction as well as a mental reaction.
And we can all identify with that, because we all have people that trigger us, don't we, in different scenarios. So we can know that this is not okay behaviour.
That's right. I've advised a number of principals to set up rules where email from a particular person goes straight into a particular folder. Do not even look at that until you are sitting in your office feeling comfortable and have and feel supported in what you're about to do in responding to that. I think one of the other things that Noel touched on is important, and parents have to remain the best advocate for their child. They have to, but they've got to do it as a parent, not as a friend, and they need to be able to do it in a respectful way and make sure they're dealing with facts and not hearsay.
Claire's called in. Good morning, Claire.
Hi, how are you going?
I'm well, thanks. What did you want to say?
Oh, look, I'm one of those parents, or I was one of those parents my son's 20 now, but when he was at school, particularly high school, I was at the school all the time. I was writing emails and, you know, in hindsight, it was really from my own experience of my schooling where, you know, I got the cane and I was severely bullied, and I think I was projecting that onto my son's school. So every time he came home and said, oh, my teacher did this, or this was really unfair, I'd be up marching up the school and challenging the teachers. And, looking back now, because I've sort of worked out where that was coming from myself, I didn't do my son or the school any favours whatsoever, because I didn't get him to take responsibility for his actions.
So what would your advice be now to parents who are doing this similar behaviour? I mean, obviously you've had the time, you've reflected on it, you can't undo what's been done. What would your piece of advice be to parents who are currently right now listening to this and doing this sort of behaviour in our schools all over Western Australia?
Well, I would be really advising them to not just take their child's side initially, but to, you know, consult with the school and actually, you know, sometimes, and I'm not saying that children should be allowed to be abused or anything like that, but that, you know, this overprotection of children and making their experience, you know, it's always got to be happy and joyful and lovely, is that, you know, sometimes we learn resilience from dealing with the more difficult things that happen to us, and that you've got to work with the school and not against the school, because it's, you know, ultimately it's a community that's bringing up your child. So, you know, if you're fighting against the school all the time and you're not teaching your child that they can work out their own problems.
Claire, thank you so much for your call, and beautiful to hear your comments, and also very brave of you to admit that you were one of these so-called helicopter parents and you've learnt from those issues.
This is Focus on ABC Radio Perth.
It is Focus, and it's 32 minutes past 10 with Jess Strutt. Pat, it is a really difficult situation, though, and delicate situation to manage in many ways, isn't it, this scenario? Because for many of us, if we get these emails that trigger us and we start to have... I mean, I've got people who contact me as a journalist and my heart starts racing and they're a little bit obsessive, but I can generally ignore it or block it. That is not the scenario sometimes for teachers. It can be delicate.
That's absolutely right, Jess. We have seen a number of cases where teachers and principals have had to take extended sick leave to cope with a particular parent. I mean, it actually doesn't take very many people to actually, you know, put teachers or principals in that frame of mind. What we see is that parents are increasingly, or these parents are increasingly, less likely to use the agreed protocols within the department about managing complaints. They choose to continue to harass the school, or to go even to their local member of parliament and to get outside intervention rather than using departmental avenues to deal with the problem.
We're getting plenty of texts in, so lots of people have experienced this or seen it or are aware of what we're talking about. Jess, as a retired teacher, I feel there is too much familiarity between parents and teachers. For example, both parties now call each other by their given names, and parents feel free to question and discuss a teacher's private life. My wife and I did not address our daughter's teachers by their given names. Time and a sense of entitlement have changed. Thanks, John in Mindari. Amanda says, unfortunately, I think parents take criticism of the children's behaviour and attitude as criticism of themselves as parents, and are therefore overly defensive about the children. If we can see our children as being individual human beings, we can take this on board in a much better way. Thanks, Amanda. We've got another one here from David. It's great to support the school and teachers, but when many parents are paying so much for education, it's not unreasonable to expect accountability. Schools dismiss so quickly concerns and questions raised by parents who are interested and involved in their children's education. David, I think that's a really good point, and one Ian made right at the start, which is everyone expects to be able to contact and ask the right questions, but we're talking about a whole nother level here of, I suppose, harassment. Terry says, this is where the problem is. Too many parents don't want to hear that their children would do something wrong. Helicopter parents are a major issue these days. I was no angel at school, but when my parents came up to the school, I knew there was going to be consequences. Me too, Terry. Not including your kids in the discussion with a teacher, as they may get upset, is ridiculous, and it doesn't help the child to grow, learn, and be responsible for their own actions. We've talked about, well, Noel touched on, I suppose, the impact of technology in helping to create an environment where this can happen. So how much of a role does that technology have in this, Ian?
Yes, Jess, it's made it very, very easy for people to comment, complain, and this is reflected right across society. Once upon a time, if you were going to put a complaint in, it would be a handwritten letter, go through the mail, there'd be an appropriate turnaround time, and so we didn't have the volume. Today, it's so easy. Facebook, other elements of social media, and one of the sad things is we've got parents modelling that type of behaviour to their children. One of the things that, Pat touched on it as well just a while ago, the volume of the emails. For some of our principals, And I was talking with a principal last year, 20 years as principal, very successful, but that one email or the chain of emails from this one parent was like the last straw. And that's what we're seeing.
That's really sad, and I think we can all identify with that, can't we?
Exactly, and then leaves the person questioning their own ability to do the job that's actually there. So I had an experience a number of years ago when I was in my school where I had the complaint come through via an email. I took the chance to respond to that during the day. I then got a return email immediately from this parent challenging another aspect. I answered that, and then I got another challenge straight away. I sat on that for a while, then I replied to the person that this was inappropriate. You're actually sending emails from a work email. My response might be copied into your line manager. So this is happening in work. People are sitting at their work desk and firing off emails to principals.
It is quite unusual behaviour. We've got Lauren on the line. Morning, Lauren.
Oh, good morning. I just wanted to put a point across as a current teacher.
Sure.
That when a teacher actually contacts parents or guardians in relation to their children, it's not because, we've got nothing else to do. We're very time poor in a very stressful environment. And so if we're contacting parents, because we've actually got an invested interest in their child's education and the child's needs, and we're doing this to try and help the child within their educational setting and to also help the community or the classroom as well, because when you have disruptive children or you have children with highly specific needs, it takes a lot of time and energy to try and assist that child. And so, unfortunately, when we do get kickback from the parents, and I've had this in the past where the parent will question the child, and I've actually had parents ring the child in the classroom in response to me actually contacting their child.
Wow.
That they actually take the child's perspective. And my approach is, look, we're here, we're trying to help your child and assist your child in every way we can. That's why we became teachers, because we're quite passionate and empathetic towards children and we want to give them the best that we can. But that child also has an immature perspective. Usually I teach teenagers, so they only see through their own eyes, the child's eyes, and they're immature. They don't understand that there's 29, 30 other kids in that classroom that you also have to respond needs-wise to. And so they can become quite a block, and I've had this quite a lot in the past where parents will only take the child's perspective and they won't see it through anyone else's eyes.
Lauren, thank you so much. Yeah. Your insights are really great. It's great to actually hear from someone who's working in this environment about the impact it has. Noel also gave us some advice when we played that piece of audio from him about how teachers should deal with this. What's your advice to principals then, Ian?
We're only talking about a small number. I need to say that most parents are respectful. And they are the majority.
Good.
But this is a minority, unfortunately, a growing minority. I think one of the things that principal needs to do in the first instance when a complaint does come through is take time, get the facts, identify just exactly what the parent is complaining about or what they're wanting, and gather the facts and then put together or respond to that appropriately. If it becomes unrealistic, and we do have parents that won't let go, so they get a response, they don't want to accept that, and we call these they're unreasonable in their content, in the nature, in the number of them. They can obviously seek support from regional office. They can seek support from their association or their union. They don't have to do it on their own. Quite often principals do feel isolated. It is one of the most isolated jobs because they are almost CEOs in their own right in a school, and they are responsible for dealing with what happens within that school. But take time, reflect, refer, and try not to get caught up in that email ping pong which can occur.
Plenty more texts coming through, so I'll read some more out. The legal requirements for teachers now are such a burden. My son is in pre-primary, and every day the teacher has a handful of incident reports to discuss with parents because someone pushed or hit or bit someone. This is normal childhood behaviour, and teachers' time would be better spent elsewhere. Thanks from Sonia, that one. And I think that's a good point. The level of reporting and administration, red tape now, it's the same in many careers, but for teachers, you really just want them to be connecting with the kids. I know I would if I was a parent. Here's another one. What about the connection between the problems at school and the increase in daycare in the preschool years? Parents are outsourcing parenting in the early years where someone else is doing everything from nappy changing, feeding, burping, etc. When the child is old enough to go off to school but is often dropped off and collected by daycare or dropped off super early. Isn't that right, Ian? So it is a great surprise that parents are, is it any great surprise that parents are projecting parenting roles onto schools in these circumstances? And one here from Jack, and this leaves us with a bit of hope, I suppose. As a parent of children who will be starting school soon, this is a great what not to do segment. That's good, Jack. That's what we're, why we have focus. It's to have a big look, a deep dive into an issue and perhaps look at perhaps some of the solutions and the ways around this. This one, anonymous on the text, is a an ex-teacher, I recall teachers protecting certain students because they knew the violent measures of the child's parents. That's an interesting one too. Pat, your response, your advice to teachers who are, you know, as, and as we just said, there's not a lot of teachers who cop this sort of harassment, but it is on the rise. What's the advice to your members around how you deal with that, similar to Ian's?
Well, it is similar. I think, initially, Noel's advice, I think, was very important that you don't deal with this on your own. I think it's very important that teachers ensure that that the school administration is aware of what the problem is and what the issues are. I mean, there is no easy solution to this. We have an agreement in our current EBA, an exchange of letters between ourselves and the department, which actually provides that teachers and principals are not required to respond to electronic and other communications from parents when they're not on duty. So that's the first step we say to people. If it's becoming overwhelming, just take a step back, reflect on what's reasonable, what's not reasonable. I mean, clearly that doesn't mean that the issue isn't dealt with, but it means that the teacher and the principal can assert a bit of control over how that's dealt with and the pace at which it's dealt with. So that's important in terms of you know, being able to prepare yourself appropriately for a response. There are no easy solutions to this. And I think, I mean, and Lauren hit on it at in a couple of respects. She made the point that that the time that you spend dealing with these issues in an already extremely busy day is time away from teaching and learning. It's teaching preparation. It's marking. It's responding to the real needs of students across the board. But the other aspect, I think, is that need. I think we need to be educating parents, those parents, that okay, your child is important and is the most important being in your world. But for people in a school, your child is no more important than any other child in that school. And that's a critical difference. And if you have that philosophy, you operate in a different manner to the person who thinks that their child is the most important child. And I would suggest that that is the only way in which responsible teachers and principals can in fact behave in a school environment.
Very good points. Another text here from Paul. I was the parent rep on my kids' primary school council and I had one mother approach me and demand that I change the colour of the school uniform from navy blue to some other shade of blue. Paul, this is bringing back memories of when my mum ran the uniform shop at our primary school. She had similar situation because her 12-year-old daughter didn't like the colour. It was pointless trying to talk to her and explain that I couldn't do this, so I invited her to present her case to the school council, which she did and was unsuccessful. This occurred over 20 years ago and I still remember the sense of entitlement this mother had to disrupt 200 plus other students to keep her daughter happy. I have tremendous respect for teachers having to deal with 30 kids and their parents. I struggled to parent my two kids at times. Paul, beautiful insights there. And, you know, we've all seen that sort of situation play out. So it's not just teachers that really have to, hit on that. A few other texts coming through. Time for people to have to pass a test to become parents. Wilton, that's a very common thing to say when these sorts of issues of parenting arise. We've now seen two generations of poor parenting. It shouldn't be a right to bring children into the world. Thanks for your texts. So good to get a variety of views. So in terms of where other states are at in dealing with this, Ian, what's working elsewhere?
Some of the things that are happening, many states have put in place some protocols, and I shared last week with the minister a school community charter that New South Wales put together, and that was in collaboration with the associations, the unions, the department, the government, and it's part of that. It also fits with the minister's violence in schools approach, in that it's a community problem, and we need to get everybody on board. The school charter in New South Wales talks about collaborative, respectful communication, and touches on a number of areas. We wouldn't copy this exactly, but it is a good starting point. And from there, schools can then look at what they put in place and how they educate and work with their community. Because as I said at the beginning, we respect the right of people to make a complaint if there's a legitimate complaint. It's how it's done and then how it's followed through. The level of complaints that we're getting, the number, resources in schools is getting more and more finite. And if the principal is spending hours dealing with some of these, and some of them are, as I said, unreasonable, that's detracting them from the main game, and that's kids and achieving and progressing. And we need to be able to get back to where schools are about.
Let teachers do what teachers do. It is 11 minutes to 11 and the news will be coming up. But today on Focus, we're talking about the changing relationship, I suppose, between teachers, parents and students. It seems that educators feel as if the idea that teachers are always right seems to have sort of been thrown out the window, and more parents these days are much more, I suppose they're swift to come in and complain, send in some instances hundreds of emails demanding all sorts of things of teachers and principals, and sometimes creating a bit of a toxic environment in some of these schools, making it hard. We're not saying that, you know, parents don't have a right to ask questions and obviously get answers if they have concerns. But we're talking about the more extreme levels here. I've got the WA Primary Principals Association President Ian Anderson and Pat Byrne, the president of the WA State School Teachers Union. And if you are one of these parents, or perhaps you see these parents where your kids go to school, you can give me a call, 1300 222 720, or send me a text. With the text line is up and running today again. It's 0437 922 720. We've had some great calls and texts, though. Your response to that, Pat, I mean, do you have an idea of where you would like to see some changes made by the government?
Well, there's no, as I said before, I think there's no easy solution to this. I think the steps that that the government has taken around the response to the violence in schools, i.e., it's a whole community problem. It's not just a school problem. I think that's a really important first step. And that wouldn't just be the case for issues that schools are dealing with. I thought, just going back to Claire earlier, who phoned and confessed to having been one of these parents, I thought that was a particularly brave and welcoming call, certainly from my point of view. Well, yes, absolutely. And obviously there was a lot of self-reflection that had gone on there. I think what that touches on, I guess, is that we're looking at, in many of these instances, it actually isn't the needs of children that are being dealt with here. It's the need of the parent. Now Claire had a specific reason for that. I think, though, that there are many parents who are not necessarily reflecting on that and saying, well, okay, whose needs are being met here? Are they my child's or are they mine? In some circumstances, children are quite embarrassed by the level of interference or involvement that their parents or some parents actually want in their school life, and would in many instances prefer that that's not the case. So I think it's a really important part of that reflection process to just ask yourself the question, why am I doing this? Is it a genuine issue about my child's learning, or is it something else that's bothering me? And that's part of that education that has to happen, although I am very loath to say that, because, again, that's something that falls on the school. These are enormously time-consuming issues, and schools are not resourced for dealing with that, and the system is actually not set up to deal with that sort of level of interaction.
We have had a response from Stephen Baxter, Deputy Director General Schools at the Education Department. Mr. Baxter said the department did not have guidelines on when school leaders, teachers and other employees respond to emails, and there were no plans to create them. He says, quote, professionals across the department can use technology to work flexibly to suit their needs and the departments. However, we certainly don't expect teachers and other staff to be checking and answering emails at all hours. That's great to know, Mr. Baxter. He also said if parents were unhappy with how their child's school was handling an issue, they could contact their regional education office to raise their concerns. So that's sort of an insight into, I suppose, the thinking there. Hello, Gerald, what did you want to say?
Just an experience. My wife encountered, she was teaching at a prestigious girls' school in Toorak, Melbourne. And at a PTA meeting, a parent came over to my wife and said, "What are you doing to educate my child?" And my wife replied, "What are you doing?"
That's very blunt, Gerald. Did it get the message across?
He got quiet and walked away. It got the message across. And just on that, I remember a former headmaster of Geelong Grammar saying that education is 10% the school, 90% the home. And just one other point, I get very tired of people saying the school should be teaching them this, the school should be doing that. It's our responsibility as a community, not just one section of it.
Gerald, thank you very much. Lovely little insight. And probably that's the takeaway for the panel today, isn't it? That really parents, hopefully, that are acting like this, and it's not many of them, but it is a growing number, that they really take on board some of the advice that came up today, I suppose, Pat.
Absolutely correct. Thanks, Jess.
Many thanks to the panel for their time today. That was Pat Byrne, the President of the State School Teachers Union, and also the WA Primary Principals Association President Ian Anderson, and Noel Woodley, who was the principal who spoke to me ahead of today's chat. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we did.
Over bridge of sights, to rest my eyes in shades of green, under dreaming spires, to Ichiku Park, that's where I've been. What did you do?